Blog Talk Radio.
It's on gender or race. I'm voting for Barack Obama not because he's black. I'm voting for Barack Obama because he's brilliant.
Who is Barack Obama? Contrary to the rumors that you've heard, I was not born in a manger. I was actually born on Krypton and sent here by my father, Jor-El, to save the planet Earth. If I had to name my greatest strength, I guess it would be my humility. Greatest weakness, it's possible that I'm a little too awesome.
It's not a police officer's job to discipline somebody's children. That's a parent's job. And if the parents don't step up and discipline their children, then they're going to see me and I won't be as charming as I normally am.
Folks, what is going on? It is a beautiful Sunday, and of course, if it's sunny, it's time for Adam, Where Art Thou? With your host, Miss Kathleen Williams. Hey, Kathleen, what's up, girl?
And my co-host, Mr. Luther Vandross.
Hey, yeah, baby. That's all right. I like that. What's happening on a beautiful Sunday, girl?
I tell you, it's a beautiful Sunday. It's a little dark outside, though. I'll tell you that.
You know, it's going to take a minute. I hate this time change. I hate this one the most because, you know, it's like, God, it feels like it's later, but it's not. So, yeah, you're right. It's dark outside.
Yeah, all day long I've been running to the phone. Oh, wait, no, the show starts in 20 minutes. Oh, wait, no. Change the clock. Every time I change, it's another clock that needs to be changed, right? And half of them
yeah.
I don't know how to change, you know?
Wow.
So, but anyway, I decided, Jay, that I'm going to love this time of year. I'm going to love it being dark outside. I'm going to love 7 to 10 to 12 to 24 inches of snow. I'm going to love it this year.
Oh, really? Okay, because you weren't living it last week, but you're going to love it now. I mean, it's a part of now, right?
I had to change my attitude, you know, check my conversation, and decide that I am going to love winter this year. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, love it, dude. Love your life, baby. Love your life.
You gotta love either that or you have to clean out my room because I'm coming to Texas. One or the other.
Oh, come on down. I have a place for you.
So I'm doing great tonight, though. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding, but now I just noticed that the New York Giants just scored a freaking touchdown. I'm hoping that the Patriots will kick their tail. This is not working out. God dang it.
Giants, woohoo! Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Come on, guys. Anyway. Yeah, I know. I knew you would get a kick out of that, so anyway. But I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing really good. I had some back issues earlier this week. You know, my
really?
Back went out on my back went out on me on Thursday, and I was supposed to attend a really important event, and I could make it. I was having trouble moving around, walking around, everything. It was really a challenge. So I'm happy. I'm feeling much better now. And so today's a great day. I was up moving around, put my heels on, everything. It was great.
Oh, okay. You know, that's something because I had one of those situations, too. I used to lift weights a long time ago. And so evidently I wasn't doing something right doing all those years. And now every now and then you get that back spasm pain and all that good stuff. So, yeah, you're right. It's a tough deal.
Yeah, it really is. But you know, I'm doing better. I'm feeling much better, and I'm very happy about that. So I'm moving around and can put my pumps on. You know, a day with pumps on is a good day.
Well, that's if you're you are earnest. I can't roll like that, but okay.
We have again tonight, Jay. We have a really great show. A really great show. A wonderful gentleman is here with us this evening. He is, and I'll tell you all about him in just a second. He's with us already. He's on the line. But I do want to talk about International Men's Day. The date is rapidly approaching. Can you believe it?
I know.
Ready? I can't believe it. But
oh my goodness.
November 19th, everybody, is International Men's Day. And International Men's Day was started by Professor Dr. Jerome Tiluxing out of Trinidad and Tobago, who recognized that men need another day to be acknowledged and celebrated. Isn't that great?
Oh, that is cool. Hey, look, more power to them, because we do. I agree. We do.
Yeah. So, you know, we have so much negative press about men, negative press about dads, deadbeat dads, and all kinds of stuff. So here's a day, November 19th, around the world, where men are celebrated and showcased. And one of the things that I notice about this, International Men's Day, and I mean it's celebrated in Switzerland, in Australia. I actually am going to be doing a radio program on Australian radio tomorrow night.
Wow.
They're so fascinated with what's going on here in New York, the Great Men of Excellence Awards, which I'm going to get to in a minute, that they called me and wanted me to be on their show tomorrow night. Dad's on the Air, it's called. And if you anybody interested in the link, I'll have it on my Facebook page and hit me up online. I will email it to you, Kathleen@KathleenWilliams.com. But anyway, this is the 11th anniversary of International Men's Day, and still, half the world doesn't know about it.
Wow. That's okay.
That's
okay. Wait, one person at a time. That's all it takes.
One person at a time. And we are rocking International Men's Day here in New York. So the Great Men of Excellence Awards program is happening Saturday evening, November 19th at 6 o'clock p.m. from 6 to 7, networking. From 7 to 10, the award ceremony, entertainment, awards, programs. The keynote speaker is Minister Abdul Hafiz Muhammad of Mosque Number 7. Receiving awards that night is none other than the honorable former mayor of the city of New York, David Dinkins. He's going to be in the house to receive his honor, his legendary Lifetime Achievement Award. George Frazier of FrazierNet, the gentleman who is the business mogul and networking mogul, he will be in the house to receive his award, Excellence in Business, that night, as will Mr. Rockin' You, David Levy of WBLS will be in the house.
I'm like, who the hell is that? I'm in Texas, baby.
listen. What an incredible lineup. And then, of course, the beautiful Miss Ann Tripp will be at the event from WBLS. She will be there from the Steve Harvey Show and WLIB, several other morning shows. She does the news. And she will be in the house as well as 1209, the gentleman of 1209 Enterprises. And award-winning choir, LC Choir, is going to be our performers that night. Listen, this show is going to be off the charts. Just off the charts. I can't wait.
Man.
So it's
wow. Time. Will it be televised? Will it be televised? Can we see this somewhere online?
It will be televised. You will be able to watch it if you are outside of New York. You will be able to watch it on streaming live. And I will be broadcasting it on television on my network, and of course it'll be on my YouTube channel after the event takes place. So if anybody wants to advertise in the journal, this would be the evening to do it. And so you can contact me at 347-948-8383, 347-948-8383. The advertisement space is really extremely reasonable. If you want to come in and be a vendor, you can definitely do that as well. But buy your tickets, ladies and gentlemen, early, because they're already selling out, and we have a limited number, and this is not just a joke, you know, something to yank your chain to get you to buy your tickets. I'm serious about this. So last year, we sold out, and I don't want to have to turn anybody away, so make sure you get your tickets early, and it's really going to be an incredible event. And I do want to tell you about something, Jay, that I didn't have a chance to talk to you about yet, and that is the theme of International Men's Day this year is giving boys a great start in life. So not only are we focused on men, not only are we focused on men, we're focused on boys. So giving them a great start in life. So what we decided to do here in New York as well is on Friday evening at two locations simultaneously, we are having workshops for young men and young women talking about how to become men of sophistication, wisdom, accountability, and greatness, otherwise known as SWAG University. Hey!
Hey! Two thumbs up.
Yep, we'll be talking about talking to the young men, and it's a conversation men to men only. We'll be in one room, and women to women only will be in another room, talking about how to be young people of sophistication, wisdom, accountability, and greatness. So any question that they want to ask, we have community leaders, CEOs, clergy people coming out to sit down and talk to these young people one-on-one, whatever they want to ask. Whatever they want to talk about, it's going to be right there available to them. So at two locations in Queens, New York, it will be at IS 59, Intermediate School 59 on Ridgefield Street in Springfield Gardens. And in Brooklyn, it will be at the Thomas S. Murphy Clubhouse of the Madison Square Boys and Girls Club. So the Boys and Girls Club is on board with us in Brooklyn. IS 59 is on board with us in Queens. So if you have children in those areas, 14 and up, you can go to any one of those programs, and the lineup is unbelievable. Community gentlemen and ladies who are ready to mentor your children for free, get there.
Man, that sounds exciting. I was getting ready to say I can't wait, but obviously I'm not there. But, hey, I am there in spirit.
Yes, you are. And you listen, will you please block off November 19th next year? I understand that things came up this year. You were supposed to be here, and you had some things that you – unavoidable things that got in the way.
I know.
Yes.
Dang it.
Next year I will be here, though.
Yeah, but it's marked off, sweetheart. It is marked off. We are ready for 2012. It's a done deal. International Men's Day 2012. Jay Ryle is in the hizzy.
All right. Awesome. That is, and I'll be holding you to that and looking forward to it as well. So
absolutely.
That said, Jay, so we ready to start the show?
Hey, girl, I'm ready when you are. We have a caller, but the lines are not open until you say they are open, and just whenever you are ready to get this thing going, let's get it going.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Well, I want to introduce to some and present to others a gentleman who is a friend of mine. We began, we met first time at the Les Brown Platinum Speakers Network workshop, and I want to say we were in Los Angeles. Yes, it was in Los Angeles, California, a couple of years ago. So he is one of the Les Brown Platinum Speakers, as I am. And Mr. Alan McDougall has penned his book about his experience going from alcoholism to sobriety. And the name of his latest book is Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within by Mr. Alan McDougall. And I just want to read a little bit about Alan to you all before we welcome him to the air. Born and raised in poverty on a dairy farm in Ontario, Canada. I love Canadians, Alan, by the way, as you're listening. But anyway, born and raised in poverty on a dairy farm in Ontario, Canada, Alan McDougall spent more than 20 years underground as a miner in the mineral-rich Sudbury Basin. Numerous challenges and abuses led him down a self-destructive path into alcohol abuse. At the moment of truth, he pulled himself out of his downward spiral, and today his focus is, as he says, not to see through people, but to see people through. Drawing from his real-life experiences, Alan is a unique voice among public speakers, one capable of influencing, motivating, educating, and inspiring audiences to take the actions required to change their lives for the better. Alan retains his lifelong passion for hot rods and enjoys nothing more than driving his 1966 Shelby Cobra through the countryside near his Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania home while listening to the doo-wop music of his formative years. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, my friend, Mr. Alan McDougall.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Alan. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing great, and I'm a Canadian, and I hope that much applause is when the Steelers beat the Ravens tonight later on.
Well, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. Because, you know, my son went to Carnegie Mellon, so this is a Steeler household.
Yeah.
Only when they're not playing the Giants, though.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, I'm so grateful to be invited onto your show. I've been waiting a long time, Kathleen.
And I've been waiting to have you here, so I am very grateful to have you. I just want to introduce you to my co-host, Mr. Jay Ryle, and my other sitting co-host, she is always with us, of my sister Ronnie of Ronnie's Rave. They're both here. So say hello to Alan, everybody.
Hey, Alan, what's going on, man? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jay. Hi, Ronnie.
Oh,
hold
on a second. Oh, there she is. I said,
did
I have
you? How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So, Alan, what an incredible story you have. What just, you know, a really incredible story. And I'd like to just, you know, have you start out a little bit with telling us what's going, you know, what prompted you to write this book, and, you know, let's start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about your life and how you began this story.
Okay, great. Thanks, Kathleen. I guess reflecting back, I was in 1987. I was 37 years old. Life wasn't going well for me. I just come out of sleeping in places I shouldn't have been sleeping in. I always said I had class, Kathleen. I slept in ditches in front of 5-star hotels. I never slept in front of a dump. And I needed to make some changes in my life, and I went to get help. And I had a problem with alcoholism, and I got into a rehab. For a 28-day rehab up in Northern Ontario, Canada. They loved me so much they kept me 35 days just because they liked me, not because I was remedial. But during those days in there, there was a man came in to speak about his experience, strength, and hope, and he said he was going to be an author. And I thought, wow, I could do that. I could do that. So with nothing to write about and nothing much to brag about, I decided back in 1987 to write a book, and 24 years later, my dream has come true.
A little delay there because I mute myself since...
nothing much to brag about.
What happened?
That's okay. You probably have a little feedback. Maybe you need to turn your thing down. That's okay.
Oh, okay, all right. Sorry about that. Gremlins. I know what's going on. Okay, there we go. I tuned into the the computer, so that's what that was. Sorry about that. So, what I wanted to ask you about too is how long the problem with the alcoholism, Alan? How did that start?
Well, it started at the early age of about 13 years old. I was
18?
Living on a farm and. I was 13, 12 or 13 years old, and I was living on a 13. Yeah, 13, 12, 13, and I was living on a farm, and where we did a lot of hard work, so that old adage, hard work, play work, play hard, work hard. And I grew up very quick.
Well, did somebody introduce you to alcohol at that age, or, you know, farm work, it just it was part of the experience, or how'd that happen?
Well, it was just part of the experience. In the haying and the harvest time in the summertime, young kids were working up in the hay mow, and that was the hottest place to work. And when we had a break between the hay coming in, we always had a beer.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. And so then the beer just progresses to, I know your favorite drink was whiskey and Pepsi, right?
Yeah, it certainly was. You read the book.
I did.
Oh, my God, wow.
But maybe if I could just back up. I talk about in the book that there was one time there was a breakdown in the field, and it's funny what I remember, but there was a breakdown in the field, and we waited about 20 minutes for a load of hay to come in, and I finished three beer, you know, like one after the other, and I never forgot the feeling I got from those three bottles of beer in 20 minutes that carried me through the next 20 years of drinking.
Wow. Did you, now, what was the feeling like? Tell me. I want to know a little bit so I can, you know, so we can relay this experience to other people, other kids even, parents, so in the event that they are listening and it's a possibility, because kids do start drinking pretty early. And if they don't understand, and a lot of times we as parents would say, here, your 13th birthday, have a beer, you know, have a sip of champagne or something like that. We introduce it. So what was that feeling like, that three beers in 20 minutes?
That three beer in 20 minutes would be the feeling of I belonged. It took away all my shyness. It took away all my pain that I had as a kid growing up. It gave me self-esteem. It gave me meaning. It gave me everything I ever lacked in my life.
My. So it was that, I don't know what that feeling is, but when you have a substance, sometimes it magnifies who you really are, but don't necessarily have the confidence or the wherewithal to express that without the substance. Or we think we don't have the confidence to express it without the substance. I remember hearing the cliche, drunk men don't lie, you know. So a lot of times people say, well, I did XYZ while I was drunk, when people say, well, that's what you really wanted to do.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so the feeling I got was just a tremendous feeling of belonging. I think looking back now, and I write about it in the book, I had a hole in my soul. And that hole in my soul needed to be filled. And what the first thing to fill it was alcohol.
That's interesting. So, okay, so you had the three beers, 12, 13 years old, and then did it become a daily thing right away? Were you in school drinking, or how did that progress?
Well, no, I wasn't. It became a weekend thing. We called ourselves the Weekend Warriors, and we always got paid a few dollars for helping the farmers, and we always had someone older go to the beer store and buy us beer on the weekends. And then we progressed to having older friends with driver's licenses, and we just drove around the countryside and drank. But never intending to have any harm done to anybody. That was just part of growing up in rural Ontario back in the 1950s and 60s. I always said, if someone was looking at my life back then, it would be like watching the Dukes of Hazzard without alcohol. That was my role. I was a Dukes of Hazzard with alcohol. We had muscle cars, we had a lot of freedom, and the police were where they are today with that, and we just had fun.
Well, and yeah, oh, we're we'll be coming up on our break in just a few minutes. So let's fast forward a little bit. So the drinking progressed and you came into your adult life. Did you realize that you had a problem, or were you in denial?
I didn't think I had a problem. All of my peers were doing the same thing, so I never knew I had a problem until later on in life when I tried to stop, and it became a problem when I was married later on in life. But no, I was just having fun.
Okay, and so then fast forward, adult now, working in the mines. How did you end up working in the mines? And interesting to me, mining is really hard work. Were you drunk while you were at work as well? How did that work?
Yeah, no, not really. But I was always under the influence, Kathleen. I always drank till maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and then get up. This is on the later stages of my drinking. Get up at 6 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning, and then drive to work. And so I was always under the influence. In the last 3 years of my drinking, I always had a beer or two on the way to work or a shot of whiskey, just to calm my nerves. And so I was never drunk in the job, but I was always under the influence.
And that's an interesting thing too. For anyone who's listening, who has had experiences with alcohol or serious drinking, there's a difference between being drunk and under the influence, and then the amount of alcohol it requires to just take that edge off. So we get the picture that alcohol was a regular part of your life and your living and your experience. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about how it impacted your relationships, and then really how it got to the point where you started to hit rock bottom. If you could just talk a little bit about that, because I want to spend the majority of our time talking about the breaking through, with the title of your book, because the story is really pretty phenomenal. So take us through, how it impacted your family and what got you to that final breaking point.
Sure, I absolutely will. The relationship that the alcohol took over, the relationship of everything else that I should have been in a relationship with. My family became secondary, although I didn't want that to happen. It did. I was a very, if you want to call it, a functional alcoholic. I worked every day, and I paid my bills, and I was very responsible that way. But I was never there for my family, my wife, and my three children emotionally. So whenever I was at home, I was upset because I wanted to be out drinking. And whenever I was out drinking, the family was upset because I was out drinking. And so it was just a recipe for disaster. And I just kept doing what I'm doing. And as we know, if we keep doing what we're doing, we'll just end up getting what we're getting. So the alcohol ended up to be the best love affair, I guess, I ever had in my life.
I want to ask you this question, too. When you are, we understand that the drinking began early, just as maybe a cultural thing or part of the experience of working the farms and rural work and so forth. But do you think that had you had an opportunity to go to therapy, was this something that really could have been cleaned up had you started therapy long ago?
I don't think I ever would have gone to therapy at that stage in my life because none of the other people in my time was doing that. So everybody else was having fun and drinking. So I think if I had the choice between going to therapy and having a good time, I would have opted for the good time.
Right. And many of us would have opted for the good time. And I just wonder about that too, because even once you begin to rely on a substance, any substance, whether if it's alcohol or it's drugs or anything else, once you begin to rely on that substance to operate or function, if you will, comfortably at work, in relationships, and just to feel good, calm your nerves, whatever it is, once that becomes a requirement, then there's an issue. There's something wrong, and there's something more based in whether it's your own emotional state or something else that's happening. So maybe we can talk about that. Let's talk about that a little bit later as well, because after going through the healing process and the rehabs and so forth, what elements did they use to help you heal? and I'd love to talk about that. So we have 3 minutes to break. So can you take us right down through to that breaking point that you experienced, so after which you had the breaking through, which we'll spend the rest of our time talking about that part?
Absolutely, and you're exactly on the mark, Kathleen, when you say that. I say this in my book, drinking was never my problem. Drinking was a solution to my problems. There's an old saying, if you get a horse thief sober, if you get a drunken horse thief sober, you still got a horse thief. So the issues were with me, drunk or sober. So what led up to the breaking point, if you would, was I left my family in the winter, spring of 1987, I wanted to commit suicide. I couldn't live that way anymore, so I thought I was going to do it and drink myself to death and just keep on drinking. And one day on June the 2nd, as it says on the inside cover of my book, I met up with myself, and I didn't like what I saw. I was sitting in a rundown bar, and I was drinking whiskey because my mind compelled me to drink, and my body was throwing it out as soon as I put it in. And so I was drinking at the table, running to the bathroom, throwing up, running back to the table, drinking, running back, throwing up. And I did that, Kathleen and Jay, for 5 hours. And that's the day I met up with myself, and I couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. So I had three choices: quit drinking, commit suicide, or stay drunk and die.
Wow!
And that's a powerful story. So I'm going to stop you right there, because that seems like the perfect moment for people to just ingest that 5 hours. When I read that part of your book, you know, the whiskey and the Pepsi together, and you come back to the table from the bathroom and pick up that glass again and say, okay, let me try it one more time and see if it'll go down, and your mind telling you, you know, drink to get rid of the pain or get a little bit more in you, and as soon as you would take that drink, you'd have to run right back to the bathroom and heave it up again. And to experience that for 5 hours, what kind of pain that must have been in. But the great thing is that we have Mr. Alan McDougall on the line, and he is not in pain, and he wrote a book called Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within. This is such a valuable book for anybody who is experiencing this or anybody who's curious about the addictions and what those things can do to you. Remember what he just said, the drinking was not the problem. The drinking was the solution to the problem. So there's other ways to handle things. So that note, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a moment. Stay tuned. You're listening to Adam, Where Art Thou? I'm your host, Kathleen Williams, and I have my co-host, Mr. Jay Riles, on the show. We're talking with Mr. Alan McDougall. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Adam,
where art thou?
Refreshing, thirst quenching, chill kind of average, and only but goodie, but it could never be the average. Guzzle it, sip it, let it flow. You know the seas. We're gonna have a hell of a time with drinks like these.
Change.
Welcome back to Adam Where Art Thou, 347-850-1272. It's one caller, number 909-265-9189 is the other. Now, welcome back. It's time to give it back to Kathleen. Kathleen, it's all yours.
Thank you, Jay. We were talking in the chat rooms over here, and let's see. EIE, welcome, EIE. Welcome, everybody, to the show. Everybody in the chat room, your comments are very good, and I thank you for your comments. EIE says, save our children. Good topic. Kathleen, alcohol is a killer. Definitely. Dr. Princess Adelia, welcome. Hey. And she says, let's see. I'm always scrolling back here. Well, someone in the chat room, I think it was Dr. Princess Adelia, was saying that awesome topic. Someone in the chat room said that their spouse started drinking at 13 also. You know, so it's a topic that hits home for a lot of people. I've known any number of people with alcohol addiction. And it really impacts the entire family. So it is a good topic to talk about. So thanks for everybody who are talking about their personal experiences. And I was also mentioning, too, that a lot of times we don't catch our children when they start early. They start drinking it. They sneak into the liquor cabinet or the wine cellar or whatever at 10, 11, 12 and grab a drink. You know, and maybe they feel that same feeling that you talked about, Alan. We don't really know how many of us will really catch the signs. And if we see the signs, do something about it. Or if somebody tells us that our kids are drinking, that we actually believe them and sit the kids down and talk to them about it. And these days, you know, alcohol might be the lightweight thing that they might be doing, you know, because there are so many other drugs out there, probably more than I even can think of or name. You know, of course, we have alcohol, we have marijuana, weed, crack, coke, meth, the whipped cream, the poppers, and you know the pain medications and the cough medicine and all kinds of stuff that the kids are using to get high. And it's something that we really have to pay attention to and remember also that the drug use is not. The drug is not the problem, it's the solution, you know, or it's the manifestation of the problem, or it's the fact that we don't sit down and just talk to our kids about those problems and those issues, you know, and share real-life experiences with them. But anyway, let's go right back. So from that day, if you're just joining us now, we're talking with Mr. Alan McDougall. He is the author of the new book, Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within, and talking about his experience living through alcohol addiction, serious alcohol addiction, and breaking through to sobriety. To now he helps other people, and he's a motivational speaker with part of the Les Brown Speakers Network, where we met, and also he works with a lot of people, and we'll get to that in just a few minutes, helping them to deal with issues of their own in their lives. So we were right at the discussion about the suicide. And that, too, Alan, is really a critical point and to bring up, that this drinking, to the extent that you were drinking, is actually an attempted suicide. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. You're right on again, Kathleen. I think that I was on a death wish looking back now, and I wanted to commit suicide, but was probably just didn't want to do that final, concisive act, so I was doing it through drinking, because when I quit drinking on June the 3rd of 1987, a couple of months later, I went to my family doctor, and he said that if I had continued with my lifestyle, I wouldn't have lived past 41. Well, I'm 61 now, and I've had 20 years of bonus, and I wouldn't trade my worst days today sober for my best days drinking back then.
I love that line. When I read that, and I know you mean it. It's not just a line. And really, I appreciate, because what you share in this book is really heart-wrenching. So I know it took a lot to put all of this on paper, and I can only imagine that you just have such compassion for others who are dealing with this problem, whether they themselves are dealing with it or they have family members dealing with it, that you were willing to share all of what you went through in your book. How was it for you writing all of these stories down for other people to read?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, Kathleen. I've been called in my social circle, if anybody's listening that works with me, I've been called the Fred Flintstone of PowerPoint. I do not do computers well. I do not do iPad, or my iPad is a flipchart. So I didn't write one word of the book. I recorded it on a mini cassette tape recorder because I knew, Les Brown and the Platinums have taught me one thing. If you're the smartest person in the group, get a new group. And I had to do that with my alcoholism as well, because six of us have drank together forever. I'm the only one sober. One's in an asylum, in a hospital with central nervous system permanent damage, and four are dead. And the same with I wrote the book. I know today what I don't know, so I surround myself with people that know today what I don't know. So I didn't wait to become a person that could type. So I just recorded every word, sent it off to a woman in eastern Pennsylvania, and she transcribed it, mailed it back to me, and then I worked with another man in California, and he helped me put it in the chronological order that it should be. So I didn't do any typing, but when I was recording it, it was funny. My feelings weren't as affected as today when I'm asked to do a book signing and I read certain parts of the book. I become very emotional.
I can imagine. Hey, Jay, are you there? Do you hear that feedback? Hmm. That's Alan's line, huh? Okay. Alan, feedback on your line. Are you on a speaker or, yeah, there it is. That's better. Okay, so that was your line, actually. Are you there, Alan?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay, I'm not sure what that was, but it was on your line. So hopefully that the sound is better on the internet now. They were saying that it was fading in and out. So EIE, let me know if that is better, if you're getting the if the sound is better now. So right, so you said of the six drinking buddies that you had, you're basically the only one that made it, and you had a friend Kevin also who actually was Kevin, was it Kevin or Key that you gave your medallion to at your 15-year
anniversary, that was my friend Keith, right,
15-year anniversary of being sober. And so, well, first of all, congratulations.
Well, thank you. I like to say, Kathleen, that I like to say that I'm a success in spite of myself. My best thinking got me sleeping in places where I didn't want to be. So when I opened up, and people ask me how I did this, and I like to break down the word how and say the H is for the honesty to ask for help, the openness to new ideas, and the willingness to try the new ideas. And it's as simple as that. But simple does not mean it's easy. But I put myself in a place where I had three choices. I made the decision to try the sobriety. And I like to say that the book talks a lot about sobriety, but the book, hopefully the book talks too about the decisions I made after I reached sobriety to write a book of value. Someone said to me, Kathleen, the other day, has this book taken a toll on you? And I said, absolutely. Not the recording of it, not the editing, not the money I put into it, but trying to live a life of value for 23 years so I would have a book to write about that was of value to society.
And definitely you've done that. And I just want to talk to you about two things in particular in this book. Because this one that really struck me, as you know, here on Adam, Where Art Thou, we talk a lot about issues facing men, that men deal with in particular, and about manhood and what that concept means and so forth to people, and also to bring that message to our children so they have something to aspire towards, for young women so they know what to look for when they're looking for a mate, and also to young men so they know what to aspire towards. And I just want to read a paragraph here. Bear with me as I read this, and I just want you to comment a little bit about that. I had some mixed reactions from my friends when I quit drinking. One drinking buddy has not spoken to me since that June day in 1987, Another friend named Paul, who used to ride in the van with us to work, Paul had his own drinking issue. But throughout our entire association, he had never once bought me a drink. 2 or 3 months after I quit drinking, I was in a hotel bar to visit an old friend, and Paul was there. "Come on, Al," he said. "I'll buy you a drink." "No, Paulie," I said. "I've quit." He went to the bar anyway and bought me a double whiskey and Pepsi, which he knew was my favorite. He walked over and plunked it on my table. "Al, be a man." The guy never bought me a drink when I wasn't trying to quit. So why would he buy one now? I looked at him, and I looked at the drink, and I sat there for 10 seconds. "You're right, Paul. I'll be a man." I got up, and I walked out. That was priceless. That was priceless.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that whole dynamic, be a man, and what the, you know, because our kids deal with peer pressure just like what you described. So it's not just, you know, in your scenario. This is a tremendous example for everybody listening, whether it's alcohol or anything else. So talk to me about that night and that moment.
I can still see that night, Kathleen. I can still see that night as I was sitting there in the table, and like I said, or like you said, he bought me the drink, and I sat there for 10 seconds, which seemed like an eternity. But I said to myself during that 10 seconds, I got to be true to me. because I was never true to me before in my life. And I got up and I walked out. And when I closed that door, I don't know if I put this in the book or not, but when I closed that door, and this is as honest as I'm sitting here in the living room, that part of the compulsion to drink left me that night. So I discovered who my true friends were. The man that never spoke to me since June the 3rd of 87 always told his family that I got him drunk and blamed me for all the escapades that he got into. So when I quit, he didn't have anyone else to blame. Therefore, he had and still has a resentment against not me, but my choices that I made.
That's an incredible story, I tell you. And, you know, when I read that, I could just envision all of the times that as a kid, you know, someone was challenging me. And the things that my son shared with me that people, when they were challenging him, you know, and that's one of the first things that will come up for men in particular, that challenge to your manhood. So if you're being a man, you're going to do, you know, he's saying if you're not a man if you don't pick up that drink and drink it. And the fact is that the person who's being challenged has to recognize that their manhood is not defined by anybody else or anything that somebody wants to put in front of you.
Absolutely. And the whole premise of the book, and maybe this is where this comes in, the whole premise of the book or the whole commonality through the theme of the book is this. For 28 years, I worked underground approximately 3,000 feet. I traveled every day from the surface to underground, and I was paid terrific money to extract the richness of Mother Earth. When I quit drinking, I knew I had to face my issues. So the 18 inches from my head to my heart is the other theme that I have in the book about going underground, if you would, traveling down that 18 inches to get through all my issues and to be comfortable with being the man that I am and to make the choices that are important to me and the people I love. And that's the thread of the whole book. And I found this out, that when I discovered that richness within me, in my heart, it serves me better and my world. And that vein of richness seems to be never-ending.
That is amazing. And again, you know, I can't continue to congratulate you enough and thank you also for sharing your story, because it's a very important one, it's a necessary one, and we need people like you who will reach down from those 18 inches from your head to your heart and discover what's in your heart and what makes you who you are, and then take all of that and be transparent with those of us who need your story. And that's what Les Brown teaches us all about, is telling your story, authentically telling your story, so that someone else doesn't have to live our mistakes. So I want to just take an opportunity now to open the lines up to, well, first I want to go to my co-host and let them get their questions in first, and then we'll go to the line. So if you're listening, this is a conversation with Mr. Alan McDougall, author of Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within. We are talking about his phenomenal book that he's written, and it is, boy, what a story it is. If you have any opportunity to just grab a copy of his book from his website, which I will ask him to tell you about right now. Alan, will you give us your website where people can go to and get a copy of your book?
Absolutely. My website is ampublicspeaking.com. ampublicspeaking.com. And when you link on there, you can go to the products page, and you will see a couple of workbooks that I have done. But the actual book that I'm talking about tonight is on the shelf, and it's through PayPal. And if you want to send a check through the mail, my address is on the website, and my business cards are on the website. So, and my telephone number is on the website. So once again, ampublicspeaking.com, and I will personally sign your book and mail it in the mail the next day.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So, Jay and Ronnie, do you have questions for our guest tonight before we go to the lines?
Well, you know, I do. I mean, my thing is that, you know, where were your parents during all this?
My parents? Well, Jay, the best thing I could suggest that you do is to buy the book, because there's a whole,
okay.
there's a whole five or six chapters on
okay.
my parents. But they were, but in all fairness to your question, my parents were struggling with their own issues so much so
okay.
that I just kind of remained undetected.
Interesting. Wow. And to overcome that, and I guess my other question is that once you wrote the book, I mean, even when people write books, you figure they write books because they're trying to touch other people. They're trying to guide people away from some of the demons that they had to exercise. And I imagine that was your thought process when you put this thing together, huh?
Yes. My whole intent of this book is for impact, not for income.
Good. Good stuff. Ronnie, what do you have?
You know, that subject is a sore subject for me, so I'm just going to just listen right now and take in what he's saying. That's a really painful subject for me.
Okay.
Well,
I'd like to interject right now, if I may, and just tell you this. I'd like to tell everybody on the show tonight, if they want the book, and Kathleen and I didn't talk about this, but I would take $5 off the price if you just email me on the website, tell me you listen to me on Kathleen's show. The price of the book will be dropped $5 just for taking time to listen to the show and to learn a good thing.
Oh, Alan, thank you so much. I appreciate
right.
that for the listeners over here on Adam, where art thou? We extend this offer to you. It is a surprise offer to everybody who's listening. You just email Alan, and you can go to his website, of course, at A as in Apple, M as in Mary, publicspeaking.com, and you can let him know that you listened to him tonight on Adam, where art thou? On Kathleen's show, and you can get a discount on the book. That's great. Thank you so much for that, Alan. We appreciate it very much, and we have a question from Mr. Velton Nix on the line right now. Velton, you are live. Tell us where you are from and ask your question, please.
Good evening, Kathleen. You know, I'm from New York, Jamaica. And Alan, thank you for sharing some of your story. You know, I'm a friend of Bill W.'s myself. For over 23 years, and I can definitely ID and relate. My question is, you know, when do you know when you cross that invisible line, so to speak?
I crossed that invisible line probably 5 years into my drinking.
Wow. How long did you drink?
I was drinking from the time I crossed the line at 18 till I finished at the age of 37.
Okay. Wow, that's a long time. That's
19
a long time,
years,
you
yeah.
know. God bless you, man. Alcoholism is a vicious disease. And, you know, I know for me, I found out that it was only a symptom of what the real problems was, like I'm quite sure you have. You know, I would really like to read your book. I got to go to your website and look it up. But again, I just want to say thank you, and I just wanted to ask that question. Kathleen, thank you for letting me in to ask that question. And again, great show.
Thank you so much, and thanks for listening to Adam, Where Art Thou? We appreciate that. And, you know, Alan, how long have you been sober as well?
June 3rd, 1987.
Isn't that awesome? So that is 24 years, yes?
Yes, and people, there's an old joke, Kathleen, that I've been so dry now I'm a fire hazard.
I like that.
Wow, that is interesting. Alan, I have one more question for you. Now, it's for all those years of drinking, do you have any type of medical issues behind that? Because, you know, obviously when people drink a lot, they may have liver disease down the line. I mean, are you good medically?
Absolutely. I seem to go right to the edge, Jay, and then kind of fall back. I was blessed to meet a young doctor that just took over my former doctor's practice up in Canada at the time that I quit, and she used me as a case study because she didn't believe my intake. And as a result of that, she put me on some very strong medication for my liver. She really helped me with that. A year after I quit drinking, I quit smoking. I was smoking two and a half packs a day. I quit smoking a year later, and she helped me with that. So, I'm fine. I may be sober, but people will debate if I'm sane or not some days.
Wow.
Alan, oh, Kathleen.
Go ahead.
Ronnie, I just wanted to tell Alan, I'm a little choked up about this whole situation. Just listening to his story is really powerful, but I wanted to let him know that my husband's been in a rehab now for 2 years, and that's why. It's hard for me to talk about it. I don't know how you overcame it, because I've been watching him try to overcome for a lot of years, and I know what you're going through. I know what you went through, and I know what you've gone through to stay sober for 20 years. Because, you know, I think once people reach that sobriety point, people think, oh, it's a piece of cake. It's over. I'm good. And it's from what I've observed, it's never over. You know, you have to work at it every single day for the rest of your life. So I just wanted
to
add that.
Absolutely. And I appreciate your honesty with me. And what I would ask you to do, if you so desire, is email me on my website, and I would be so glad to reach out to your husband and say hello to him, or offer him something. But I'll tell you this, I still do go to meetings. I still take people to meetings. I still do my meditation meetings every morning. I still do, I do the mechanics, because I've seen too many people go back to AA meetings after a period of sobriety, coming back in, having a relapse. And the common denominator that I've seen in 24 years of meetings is that they stopped going to meetings.
Sorry. Never can stop. I've met many people that were, you know, attending the meetings with him, and I've met people that were still going to meetings after 30 years.
Yes, and that's what I do too, because I think there has to be somebody in the meetings with longevity to show the newcomers that it's possible.
That is fabulous, Alan. And Ronnie, thank you for that share, because it's so important that we recognize that this is something that impacts families all over the world, all ages. As Alan, you heard Alan talk about the fact that he started 13. Somebody in the chat room said that their husband started drinking at 13 years old. So, you know, again, you will have to pick up the book to see what was going on with the parents. As you know, Jay asked a really critical question. Well, where are your parents? And we know that as parents, kids will sneak a drink, get into the liquor cabinet and sneak a little here and there. Or maybe even as parents, we might be giving them a little taste of something. So, you know, it can start any kind of way. But fortunately, we have the opportunity of listening to the success stories as well. So there is a path to sobriety afterwards, and it does take a tremendous amount of work, a tremendous amount of dedication, and an opportunity to take that 18-inch journey from your head to your heart and decide that sobriety and a life of quality and excellence is exactly what you are deserving of and what's possible for you. And as our friend Les Brown always says, if it's possible for one, it's possible for all. If it's possible for Alan, it's possible for you or your loved one or your friend or your child or anyone. So, that said, I want you to sit tight. We are talking with Mr. Alan McDougall, author of Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within. This is an incredible book available on his website at ampublishing.com. We're going to finish up with him when we get back and have a little closeout, so stay tuned. And you can still get in with questions at 347-850-1272. Or 909-265-9189. We look forward to talking with you. If you have a question, absolutely put it in the chat room. Give us a call. We are going to break right now, but we will be right back. Kathleen Williams, your host. Stay put.
Adam,
where are thou?
Welcome to Esprinet News, 90-second news break. Movie mogul George Lucas, the creator of Star Wars, reached into his own pockets to bankroll the new action movie, Red Tails, about the Tuskegee Air Program with African-American pilots in World War II, spending $58 million to make it and $35 million more to distribute the film. Federal authorities arrested New York City police officer Michael DeRogatis for false arrest of a black man and lying about it. Authorities say they intercepted a phone call between DeRogatis and a friend when he said, "Another N-word fired, no big deal." The man was kept in jail for nearly 36 hours before being released. A Massachusetts elementary school principal has caused outrage by banning Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Columbus Day. Principal Ann Foley wrote, "When we were young, we may have been able to claim ignorance of the atrocities that Christopher Columbus committed against the indigenous people." I know that didn't go over well. A federal judge said that he's fed up with the quest to prove that President Barack Obama is using a fake Social Security number and a forged birth certificate. He dismissed the latest lawsuit by crazy lady Orly Tates, the so-called birther queen. There you have it. I'm Jerome Esprit for Esprinet News.
Hey, Dad, what are you doing at the start of the school year? Why not take the time to take your child to school?
Yeah.
In September, we celebrate Dad's Take Your Child to School Day.
Yeah.
Our children need us. It's important for them to know we care. Find out when your child's school celebrates this event and join with fathers, grandfathers, stepfathers, and mentors in taking your child to school together. Then stay involved. Your child will love it and do better in school.
This is a message from the State and City of New York.
Oh, rubber, 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 rub
Too many fathers are AWOL, missing from too many lives and too many homes. They've abandoned their responsibilities. We need families to raise our children. We need fathers to recognize that responsibility doesn't just end at conception. That doesn't just make you a father. What makes you a man is not the ability to have a child. Any fool can have a child.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
Is the caller number 347-850-1272. Welcome back to Adam or Art Thou. 909-265-9189 as well. You can call in and be a part of the conversation. Kathleen Girl, let's do this.
Thank you so much, Jay. I have a great question for you, Alan, in the chat room. EIE, enough is enough, would like to have to talk a little bit about the spiritual aspect of staying sober. Oh, do I have to hear it? Alan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Yeah, someone in the chat room, Enough is Enough, one of our regulars, and Enough EIE, thank you so much for being with us tonight in the chat room. His question, or the question is, they would like to have you talk a little bit about the spiritual aspect of staying sober.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if people... And it talks about an Alcoholics Anonymous, about a power greater than yourself, or a God as you understand him. And that really helped me a lot because I didn't know what I believed when I entered the doors of AA, because I believed in myself, and of course that let me down. And I also believed in the alcohol, but of course let me down. So in order to get a framework around the spiritual growth for myself, that phrase, a God as I understand him, opened up a door for me to believe in something greater than me. And I've learned to pray, and I've learned to meditate, and I've learned to through the 12 steps of AA to develop a spiritual relationship with a power greater than me to do God's work. I did that through the meetings, doing service work. And the framework of AA talks a lot about that. Now, a lot of people come into my office and say, I don't believe a power greater than me. So to make things simple, I say, if you don't believe in a power greater than yourself, go downtown on Main Street of any city and take off your clothes in front of the post office, and someone greater than you will come along and take you away.
Wow.
That's as simple as it gets. It's just something that you believe in, and the spiritual side has really, really enhanced my life. And I'm not doing it my way, I'm doing it thy way.
I love it. So, EIE, thank you so much for that question. And Alan, of course, thank you for the answer. That was very powerful. So it is, we are walking up on 8:15, so it's almost time for us to close out. We still have yet to do Ronnie's Rave. I would love for all of you to go to Alan's website, AM as in Mary, publicspeaking.com, and you can pick up a copy of his book there, as well as a number of other really fabulous products. You can see some video clips of him doing his speaking. The name of his book is Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within, by Mr. Alan McDougall, a dear friend of mine and also a member of the Les Brown Platinum Speakers Network. Alan, I want to thank you so much for being a guest here tonight. It was my pleasure to have you here. And anything that I can do to continue to get this message out, please do not hesitate to let me know so how I can support you in any way. It's my honor to do that.
Well, thank you so much, Kathleen. And if anyone's in the audience that ever wants to
to have a speaker come in or do another show, I'm more than willing to help in any way that I can. I believe in giving back. And as Les Brown says, if you're the smartest person in the group, get a new group. And that's how I met Kathleen. So Kathleen and Jay and everyone else, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And everyone else, remember if you're listening tonight to Adam, Where Art Thou, you can write to Alan McDougall on his website and let him know that you listen to him here at Adam, Where Art Thou, and he will give you a discount of $5 off the cost of his excellent, excellent book. So make sure that you do that. And, Alan, again, thank you for being here. His website, again, is ampublicspeaking.com, and the name of his book is Breaking Through, Discovering the Riches Within by Mr. Alan McDougall. Alan, thanks again. Have a great evening. Woo! That's great.
Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Really great story. Really great stuff. So we have a couple of minutes, so we're going to do Ronnie's rave. So, Ronnie, can you give us the rave in about 3 minutes?
Oh, sure.
Oh, great. Go ahead.
Ready. Of course, by now everybody knows we're on Verdict Watch. The jury wrapped the case for Dr. Conrad Murray last week, so now Friday was the first day of deliberation. So, I've been waiting patiently. Hopefully they get a verdict in before the end of the week. Everybody's on pins and needles. And I wanted to speak a little bit about a cowardly or courageous act that occurred this week. The reality superstar Kim Kardashian filed for divorce from her husband, New Jersey Nets star Chris Humphries, after only 72 days. And the filing caused an outrage and uproar among fans and the public in general. People are
sure
just
did.
On the earth about it. And,
It sure did.
Yeah, everybody wants to know, is she going to return a 20.5 carat diamond engagement ring that Chris brought for her? That he had brought a Brinks truck. And then also, you know, was the marriage a publicity stunt for the ratings for the reality show? Was it done for the $10 million in endorsements that they received from ads and pictures and editorials, et cetera? But I was disappointed. I was hurt that they broke up that quickly. And I watched the wedding spectacular, I'll admit it. I thought it was fabulous. It was beautiful. Baby face was there. Oh my God. Anyway, I started thinking, you know, do we take marriage too lightly and rush in without considering the true commitment that it takes to endure a marriage? And do we take the time to find out who we are going to marry? And we question, you know, if you're going to get into a marriage and then you do get married, do you question, oh my God, am I heading for a disaster and then bail out right away? So, you know, everybody's in an uproar about her filing for divorce, but I'm thinking back in my life, there's some people that I should have ran away from. But then do you find out, you know, in the long term, should you stay with somebody that's going to end up in a disaster, or do you walk away? I don't know. So I've been, like, kind of on the fence on both sides, like, what would anybody else do? Would I have had the courage to walk away from somebody in 72 days? Anybody got anything to add?
72 days is all I can say. People were pissed off. We were doing it on our show on Saturday, and boy, folks were in an uproar. Good God. Yeah.
Wendy crazy. Williams took her mother's head off about it, and her mother stood by her. You know, saying, look, I got to stand by her. If she says it was something that she had to do it. But I just wonder, there's some people that I think back in my life, should I have walked away in 74 days? I mean, 70 days or 68 days, 65 days. I don't know. So I'm kind of like on the fence about it. I don't want to judge her, you know, it's because of the money and all that that people are judging her, but I'm wondering, sometimes you meet somebody and you think they're one way, and then you find out, oh, my God, I got to get out of here before this turns into something
that's
that
right.
I can't handle.
That's right. Well,
right?
We are, you're absolutely right. So thank you for that. Thank you for the rave, and thank you for something for all of us to think about. You know, definitely check yourself out before you walk to the altar. Before you say I do, before you get that 24-carat ring.
They came in a Brinks truck.
So anyway, listen, thank you for that, for Ronnie Grave. It's always great. And I just want to thank all of you for listening tonight. We appreciate you thanking our guest, Mr. Alan McDougall, who was phenomenal. His story is a great one. Again, pick up the book on the website, ampublic.com, called Breakthrough. International Men's Day, guys, November 19th, Saturday, November 19th at the Black Spectrum Theater, 177th Street at Baisley Boulevard. Go to the website. It is getting over 600 hits a day. The information on the website is so valuable. Send your friends there. Send all the men you know there. InternationalMen'sDayNewYork.com, www.InternationalMen'sDayNewYork.com. We will be taking names for next year's International Men's Day. So if you have someone that you think should be honored as a great man of excellence in your life, send his bio and his photograph. Tell us why you think so, because we will be gearing up for 2012 after we finish 2011. But for now, make sure you're in the house Saturday night, November 19th at the Black Spectrum Theater. It'll be a great event, and tickets are selling fast, so please don't wait till the last minute to get it. They're $40 in advance, but they're $50 at the door, and you guys know you don't want to pay $10 more at the door. So, that said, and Friday night, Swag University at IS59 and also at the Boys and Girls Club in Brooklyn. Hit me up on Facebook. Get the announcement on Facebook. It's all there. And JL King is coming to New York December 1st. We'll have more information about that. But for now, I want to wish you all a phenomenal November. Thank you for being here tonight. We'll see you next week with another incredible show. You are listening to Adam, Where Art Thou? With my co-host, Mr. J. Riles, my incredible sister, Ronnie of Ronnie's Rave, and me, Kathleen Williams. Love you all. Have a great week. Good night.
Adam,
where art thou? Now.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. People in Oklahoma may be accustomed to tornadoes, but this has been a weekend of earthquakes. The largest one so far hit last night near Sparks, 44 miles northeast of Oklahoma City. Roger Baldwin is a geophysicist with the National Earthquake Information Center in Golden, Colorado. He says that quake measured 5.6 and could be felt for miles.
We've had calls in from Kansas and Nebraska and Missouri and Arkansas and Texas, so, you know, it's widely felt throughout that region.
A quake with a magnitude of 4.7 struck the same area yesterday morning, and this morning a quake of 4.0 hit 36 miles east of Oklahoma City. There were no immediate reports of serious injuries or major damage from any of the quakes. Texas Congressman Ron Paul is the winner of a presidential straw poll in Illinois. WBEZ Sam Hudzik reports Republicans in President Obama's home state organized the balloting to try to gain relevance in presidential politics.
The Illinois Republican Party says 3,600 people participated, some at a few polling places around the state, but most ballots were cast online, which is how Ron Paul claimed more than 50% of the vote. U.S. Senator Mark Kirk is an Illinois Republican who helped launch the poll.
I think what this does is it shows the relative strengths of the candidates. Ron Paul is obviously a big online performer.
Organizers say they tried to make sure online voters did not cast more than one ballot. Businessman Herman Cain finished a distant second, with former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney taking third. Illinois Republican leaders say they hope the straw poll will become a tradition and encourage presidential candidates to treat the state like a battleground instead of just a good place to raise money. For NPR News, I'm Sam Hudzik in Chicago.
I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Even
know, those are the things that when you're able to forgive and let that thing go, you get the healing. Your whole household gets the healing. Your child gets the healing. And there's an energy and a space from which you can grow now. Whatever you are going through, you can make it. I am unique, yes, but I am no different from any one of you. So I don't know whether or not it's a bad marriage. I don't know if it's domestic violence. I don't know if it's a foreclosure. I don't know if it's a job loss. I don't know if it's whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is, because you're going through it and it's meaningful to you. But know this day that you can make.
One of the main reasons that I think that it's important for us as single moms to have our sons and our daughters really involved in sports is because this is where they learn a tremendous amount of their skills. Communication, teamwork, accountability, responsibility, nutrition, health, wellness, self-consciousness, all of that. So with that said, I thank you all so much for your time, and I'm going to pass the mic on to the next person, but I look forward to working with all of you a little bit more. Thanks a lot.
Adam, where art thou?
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network. Network.
Welcome to Esprinet News, 90-second news break. Fox is bringing back the sketch comedy series In Living Color with creator and star Keenan Ivory Wayans on board as host and executive producer. Two half-hour specials will air as part of the network's 25th anniversary celebration in mid-season. If successful, it will join the regular schedule next season. Two chemicals considered harmful to children are still in some bottles of Johnson & Johnson baby shampoo, according to a coalition of health and environmental groups. The disputed ingredients are dioxane and the substance called Quinterium 15 they release formaldehyde. Johnson & Johnson said it's reducing or gradually phasing out the chemicals. So we have to read the labels. 30 large and profitable U.S. companies paid no income taxes from 2008 to 2010. A comprehensive analysis of 280 corporations on the Forbes list found that on $160 billion in profits, they paid negative $10 billion in taxes for an average effective rate of negative 6.7%. In Washington, a federal judge approved the government-backed settlement that will provide $1.25 billion in relief to thousands of black farmers wronged by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. There you have it. I'm Jerome Esprit for Esprinet News.